Welcome to the Second Chunder Living Podcast. My name is Charlie, and I'm here with Eli Sweet and Sasha Matuzak, both writers on the site. Today we're going to talk about three different topics, and one of them is actually kind of a split topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first topic is Zebra Music Festival, which was about 13 days ago or so in Chengdu, big music festival. The second topic is immigration and nationality, correct, as it relates to
dual citizenship,
exactly, stuff like that. The third topic was summertime in Chengdu.
Yeah, and the potential...
Summertime! All right, which one should we start with?
Let's start with immigration and nationality, because this is a topic that the three of us have been talking about for the last couple minutes. We have a lot of questions and hopefully some answers as well. The reason why this has come to a head recently is because Sasha has recently had a child and is navigating the process of attaining nationality and citizenship and so on for his child. And Sasha is an American, and the child was born in China. Maybe you could tell us more about the situation and how it leads us to this topic.
Okay. The reason why we ended up even discussing it is because for a foreigner born in China, as soon as you apply to your respective consulate, you get your nationality. So we went to the American consulate, and within a week, little man had his passport. You know, went really quickly.
What's his name?
Dorian.
Little man.
So anyway, little man had his passport. Went really easy. No problem with it at all. Now for the Chinese do not accept dual citizenship. You are either Chinese or you're not. A good example of that is what happened in Hong Kong when Hong Kong went over back to the Chinese in '97. All of the Indians and Nigerians and everybody who was holding UK passports there lost their citizenship to Hong Kong.
Really? Wow, I didn't know that. So now they just have no Asian citizenship.
I'm not exactly sure what happened to a lot. A lot of them ended up being repatriated back to either their own countries or back to the... England gave them a lot of passports. Some of them stayed on. I'm not sure, but it was a big issue.
But if you were Han... You could get a Chinese passport?
If you were Cantonese, then yeah, you had a... If you were Chinese, then you had a Chinese passport. And if you were not, then you had no dibs on it. And it's in China, there's two different ways to distinguish nationality. One is blood and one is birth.
Uh-huh.
So most countries that do not have large immigration populations do it by blood.
Mm-hmm.
Germany for a long time was by blood. England, France, and America are by birth and blood.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you're born in America, you have the right to the American citizenship.
Or if your parents are American.
Exactly.
So, is getting dual citizenship for a child born of a foreigner in China difficult? Is it possible?
It's impossible, according to the law. It's impossible. You're not allowed to have Chinese citizenship as well as another citizenship. According to the Chinese law, you can't. So, now, if you choose to try and do it, which I know several Chinese parents, for example, their children were born in Australia or in Canada, and so they have the Canadian or Australian passport, and they still managed to get a hukou, which is what you need in order to get Chinese citizenship.
What is a hukou?
A hukou is a...
household registration?
Thank you, household registration. Basically, like wherever your family is from, you have, start from the very street that you were born on, there's a hukou office. And you go to that office and say, I live down the street in that building. You know, I'm Chinese. I need my hukou. And the hukou is, without a hukou, you can't get a job. You can't go to school.
It's almost like a birth certificate or a social security number or something.
It's like it's like the cornerstone of your identity within the Chinese bureaucracy. I mean, it's going to determine whether or not you're eligible for social services, including, you know, healthcare or... education for your children. That's why a lot of people, if they're living outside of their province of birth, if you're a kid, you have to go back to your province of birth in order to take your gaokao. And you'll have to, you know, based on where your hukou is, your entry into the system is going to be a little different. I mean, specifically...
Country hukou, city hukou, rich person hukou, poor person hukou, it makes a big difference. Used to make a huge difference.
You get the platinum version.
Yeah, you know, you can get the pimp version.
So are you going to have to choose between American or Chinese citizenship for your kid?
There is no choice. As far as I'm concerned, American citizenship has many more advantages.
Right. Mm-hmm. So should you choose U.S. citizenship, then that means he cannot get a hukou. So what is his official status in China? Is like he's a guest or how does...
Yes. What he is then is he's an American with a visa, just like any other expat here.
Really?
What kind of visa options are available for a child?
You know, I'm not
Chinese?
Sure. I'm not sure. I think a dependent visa. I remember going through that process with a friend of mine who had to do that as well. And he had a dependent visa through his wife. I have a dependent visa through my wife. So I'm assuming the kid will also have a dependent visa through his mom. That's what I'm thinking. But, you know, I'm not really sure.
Seems like a safe assumption, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's...
Actually, it's going to be very interesting because I'm going to Hong Kong tomorrow. And one of the first things I'm doing is I'm going down to the CITC down there and figuring it out, because you know how it works down there. You want one next day, you got to pay a G. You want one, you know, 2-3 days, you know. And I'm only going to be there for 3 days
over the weekend.
What do you expect to happen when you go there? Do you have any idea of how to play?
No,
are you going there for your visa or for your kid?
No, my visa's fine. I got a multi-entry 1-year visa, so I'm cool.
So you're going there for the kid?
No, I'm going there to meet my parents. My parents are flying in.
But this is also the first time that you've kind of really tested the system as far as nationality and rules, getting citizenship, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, well, the real test now...
It's leaving the country is the first time.
Yeah, that's the first thing you need. If you have an American passport and you want to leave the country, you need an exit visa. So you need to get that. So you need to go down to the exit and entry office down there in Chengdu,
mm-hmm.
in the city, and get an exit visa.
Wait, to leave China?
To leave China. Because the thing is you can't leave, you can't go anywhere with no stamps in your passport.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're talking about for the kid?
He's American. If he were leaving America and going to somewhere, it would be no problem. But because he's in China and he's going somewhere, he needs a stamp in his, basically it's a book that says, that's an exit, allows him to exit here. If he were going from America to anywhere else, it wouldn't be an issue. But because he was born abroad, he needs an exit visa from the country that he was born in order to go anywhere.
Gotcha. Otherwise, they'll look at it and they'll say, yeah.
I don't know what they'll say. Who knows what, you know, it's arcane bureaucracy.
It's interesting. It's not clear for them. They're like a 3-month-old child. They must know what happened, right?
You know, they probably have that law in place for some good reason, and I'm not sure what it is, actually. But I know that you need it. So we got one. So he's got an exit visa. Now, to get back in, he needs another visa. He needs an entry visa. And that's going to be the big test, because I'm not sure what visa he needs. I'm not sure how much it's going to cost to get it. I'm not sure how long it's going to take. I'm only there until Tuesday, so I got to take care of it immediately.
Are you
so
bringing him with you?
Yeah. I hope it doesn't become an issue, actually. I hope they're like, yeah, we can get it done, you know, tomorrow, and it's a 1-year visa, and, you know, the money, whatever, I'll pay for it. But, like...
Where are you taking him?
To Hong Kong.
No, I mean, that's to get the visa, but then isn't the visa to go out of the country somewhere else?
No, they're coming right
back. No, I'm coming right back. I'm just going there to meet my parents, pick them up, and bring them to Chengdu.
Oh, gotcha. Why don't your parents just come directly to Chengdu?
Because they've never been to China before, and I figured going to Hong Kong might be an interesting thing for them, yeah.
Maybe it's because I'm American, but I feel like if you're born in the country, you should kind of get, you know, citizenship. Especially if one of your parents is a citizen and you're born in the country, it would seem like that's a no-brainer. You should definitely be able to get that citizenship.
Oh, he can get Chinese citizenship without a problem. It's just he can't have both.
Right.
He's either Chinese or American,
right.
According
so,
to the law.
According to the law, in order to get Chinese citizenship, you have to forfeit his U.S. passport. Is that correct?
Yes. They, you know, I'm not sure. That's the gray area that people like the Chinese families I mentioned before in Australia and Canada managed to exploit in order to get dual citizenship.
So if you ask, like, a PSP and say, you know, my son...
Of course they'll say no. If you ask the PSP, hey, he's got an American passport, can we get a hukou? They'll be like, no. But if they don't know shit about his hukou or about his American passport, then he can get a hukou.
Have you asked them what I need to do to get him citizenship?
I know what it takes in order to get a hukou. You just register him where he was born. He goes through his mother's hukou. So his mom has a hukou.
So what does he have now? Does he have a U.S. passport?
He has a birth certificate from a Chinese hospital, and he has a birth abroad certificate from the U.S. consulate and an American passport. With those three things...
Does the passport have his photo in it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Naked?
No.
It's just like a profile of his little 3-month-old face?
He's just looking right in the camera. It's pretty cute. So yeah, his picture's in the passport. He's got, so as an American citizen, no problem. Now, what Eli said earlier was the real rub of it all. According, you know, if you want social services, if you want to do anything in China, you need a hukou as Chinese. You're not, like the state, for example, gives insurance, you know, social services. If you have a baby, the state, you can apply to the state for insurance, for state insurance, and that is somewhere around 60 kwai per day. So if you pay, you know, 4,000 RMB to give birth to a child, which is your basic fee, you know, more or less, that's how much it'll cost. You can, they give you 60 kwai a day over 3 months, I think it is, 90 days.
4,000 kwai. So how, in the States, how much is this? $20,000 or $30,000, right?
I'm not sure. $8,000 probably? $10,000?
I heard 20,000 or 30,000.
I don't know. You know, here it's 4,000 kwai.
4,000 kwai, wow.
The most expensive hospital in China, or in Chengdu, for to give birth is 30,000.
Still pretty cheap by Western standards.
Did you guys do a home birth?
Nah. We should give birth in a Chinese hospital.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw that.
There's a post on Chengdu Living about that topic, giving birth. There's a
series,
right?
Yeah.
And then one of the posts is about the actual birth process in the hospital, selecting a hospital, stuff like that.
Yeah. As for nationality, he can, the thing is, if the governments don't communicate about, you know, citizens from either country, which they don't, not in China and in America's case, in most cases, then it's possible to get him a hukou and get him a Chinese passport and at the same time have an American passport. And the risk is, as soon as the Chinese find out, if they ever do, then you will face criminal charges, and you will get your passport stripped. You might get deported.
So, what's your game plan then?
My game plan is he's an American. You know.
How does your wife and your wife's family feel about that?
They want him to be American. They're not. You know.
They're not sweating it.
Well, they're Chinese. They understand what it is to have a Chinese passport. You can't travel anywhere really easily, unless you're going to Burma. You know, you're also
Cuba, North Korea,
you know, big time countries like that. You know, they know, you know, it's very.
How much control is there over where people live? It's kind of an unrelated topic, but you mentioned that the hukou signals, you know, your birthplace.
Yeah,
a lot of control, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is a
complete control.
This is
so someone, let's say, for example, born in Chengdu, are they not allowed to move to a different city? Or if they are, what kind of...
Before they
were
not.
Yes, that's right. I mean, that's the way that used to work in the past, is that you would have to get permission from your danwei, even if you were going, you know, across town and you're moving to another part of the city.
What's a danwei?
Your danwei is your work unit, and that's... It's like the smallest unit of political representation in China. And, you know, people often talk about how China is an authoritarian state and it's non-democratic. But in actuality, there is a form of democracy in China. It's just not direct democracy, because you can go and participate in your danwei and you can elect the leaders of your danwei. Your danwei can elect the leaders of the, you know, whatever the collection of danweis that makes up your chu in the city. And then the leaders of the chu will elect whoever the leaders of the city are. The leaders of the city will elect the province. And then it'll
so now it's possible to move to a different city.
Now it is, yeah. But there are still, like, some
problems,
arcane laws on the books that don't get enforced that have to do with your registration. Like, you have to ask the leader of your danwei if you want to get married and stuff like that. But that kind of stuff doesn't stop many people. But for the hukou is still, like, a really salient issue when you look at things like the floating worker population. Because the floating workers, and there's an estimated maybe 100 million in China, and these are people who have hukous for the countryside, but they're living in the city, and they don't have any way to engage in the political structure of the city. They're aliens.
They don't get social services for the kids that are born in the city. When they go to get apartments, they may or may not, you know, meet hassles from the landlord because they're not registered. They might have to pay more. They might have to pay a fee. You know, they're basically legally not allowed to be in the city, but they are anyway, and everyone tolerates it.
Because the economy needs it, but they're disenfranchised.
Mm.
Their kids can't go to
school.
And,
that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So the hukou is a huge thing.
So if your child gets a hukou, does it matter if he has citizenship?
What do you mean? Which citizenship?
If he has a Chinese hukou, does he need Chinese citizenship? Is that not?
They're one and the same.
I mean, but means
Chinese citizenship.
So he can't get a hukou if he's a U.S. citizen?
Yeah. He can still get a hukou, but you're breaking the law.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, is it going to be a problem, like, when he wants to go to public school? Can he go to the Chinese public school system?
If he had a hukou and was in the Chinese system as a Chinese citizen with a hukou, then he could go to school no problem.
So I guess the option is, I mean, you could send him to, like, a private school or something, right?
I don't plan on sending him to Chinese school anyway. I mean, I've been to Chinese schools. I don't need to put my kid through that. You know, I'm not going to do it. But, like, that's not in... They're really, like, if you think about it in terms of, like, long-term advantages... There aren't that many right now for having a Chinese citizenship. In terms of freedom of travel, you don't have much.
Right.
Within or without the country, you know, according to the laws. The only real thing that is a benefit right away for someone who, like me, who would want to get a hukou and still keep the American citizenship for Dorian would be insurance. The government will pay for any time he gets sick, any time his mom gets sick, and they pay for a hospital expense pretty much. In fact, we made money because they gave us 6,000 plus insurance for giving birth, and it only costs around 4,000. So, you know, stuff like that.
So
but not, we're talking 2,000 RMB here,
right.
Not a lot of money.
Are you going to have to, like, pay for his health expenses or his health insurance then out of pocket since he's going to have an American citizenship and not a Chinese hukou?
There's still private insurance here in China that I can get to.
Right.
So, I mean, of course I got to pay no matter what. But if he's a Chinese citizen, then he's entitled to, you know,
subsidized,
a piece of the state money,
yeah.
Of the state insurance money.
Cool, all right. Well, you mentioned immigration as well.
People are mad about the state of the immigration system in the United States, and that's similar.
It really just seems like it's not enforced, really.
Well, do you feel like the attitude of the Chinese government or Chinese immigration policy towards foreigners has changed significantly in the time that you've been living here?
I think it has improved greatly. I remember back in the day, visas were not necessarily difficult to get, any more or less difficult, but it was such a gray area. You know, you could get any number of different types of visas for the right amount of money,
yeah.
Knowing the right person.
And
now,
I remember when I first came, it was much easier than now.
I find it now to be more according to law, you know, just more like clear.
Standardized.
This is what you do, you get this visa. And that's like...
Seems like they're enforcing a lot more than laws now.
Yeah.
It does feel more strict than a couple of years ago.
Because you didn't have to... Remember back in the day, you could drive to like any town outside of Chengdu and buy a one-year multi-entry F visa. Leshan, for a while, was like the spot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Even after that got shut down, people were still going to Hong Kong buying one-year visas.
Yeah. I was talking to this guy who was born in Hong Kong and he spent most of his life in China. He's like 30-something, 40 maybe. And he was talking about how when he first moved to Shanghai, there was like a certain region of the city where foreigners were authorized to live, and they couldn't live anywhere in the city, and they were all in sort of like a little foreigner yuppie ghetto.
Oh, that's interesting.
You guys want to move on?
Let's do it. Let's talk about Zebra, man. Tell us. I heard a lot of stories about Zebra, because it rained real heavily those 3 days, right? And a lot of people had equipment problems and stuff like that, and we don't know anything about it. Neither Eli or I went to the Zebra Festival because we're just too cool.
Heard some stories, though.
You know what I'm saying? So let's hear some stories, man. What happened?
Well, it was not too dissimilar from last year, really. Last year was the first Zebra Music Festival, so this year was the second one. It was 3 days long, just like last year. A lot of similar music, similar acts, three stages, one electronic, one kind of folk music.
Similar, like what kind of acts? Like
A lot of pop kind of rock on the main stage, a lot of folk music on the little bar stage.
What kind of folk music? Like
acoustic guitar, singing, folk music.
Oh, cool.
It was pretty cool. And the third stage was the Shomao electronic music stage.
How'd they get their name on the stage?
It's their stage entirely. It has nothing to do with Zebra.
They managed to get a space, though. They rented space on the field.
I'm not sure how the negotiation went exactly, but essentially the arrangement is Shomao provides the stage, the equipment, and so on and so forth, and Zebra provides them with the space. And actually, they monetize it by selling drinks at the festival.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe that they get a cut of the ticket sales.
Gotcha. Shomao is a club in downtown Chengdu. That Charlie DJs at, and Sasha and I have attended on numerous occasions. For the lay listener out there.
Right, they're the natural host for the electronic stage. If
yeah.
there would be any, it would be Shomao. If Shomao didn't do it, I don't think there's any other place that really could.
And that's the stage you played on.
Right.
So tell us about the stage, man. Was it a dope party?
It was really fun. The first day was the most fun day, I think, in my opinion. And most of the people that I saw, I think, agreed. There were more people on the first day this year than there was on the second, which is a change from last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why that was. Weather might have played a role.
Is it hard to get out there?
It's about 25 minutes by taxi, about 35 yuan or 40 yuan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not too bad.
So, yeah, it's not too bad. You can also take a bus up there. It's not too far away. But rain played a large role in the festival this year, as it did last year.
Mm-hmm. Damn, that's some bad luck.
It is some bad luck. I mean, I think timing has something to do with it, you know?
It's in the rainy season.
Yeah, it's in the rainy season, right. We're in the middle of the rainy season right now.
Matter of fact, it's raining right now.
Sure enough.
It's raining right now. So the second day, it really rained hard. In the evening, it just really came down completely. And that was pretty incredible to see. Everyone just suddenly gets drenched. I mean, it's not raining all day, and then all of a sudden it just comes down real heavy, real hard, real fast.
In the afternoon?
That was a hardcore storm, too. It was one of the biggest storms this year so far.
Really?
Yeah. I know when it hit my house in the southeast.
Right.
It was huge.
So I think it was about, 10 p.m., something like that. 9 p.m., 10 p.m., evening. So I was at the Chomel stage, and when
right
it starts raining, everybody just starts kind of freaking out. A lot of people enjoyed it, I mean, there was a different and new kind of energy in the air after the rain started falling. And it was pretty enjoyable. It was pretty interesting. The Chomel stage did get almost completely wrecked. Everything got covered in water. I'm sure that there was some equipment that broke. The DJ could barely even be playing music.
Didn't a dude get shocked?
I didn't hear that.
Who? I thought you told me that.
No.
I must have been Jovian. Jovian or somebody told me that a dude got shocked and he went flying into the crowd and got up and was like, I need to go to the hospital. That's the story I heard. I thought that was you that told me.
That's a funny story. No, it's the first time I heard that.
Huh. Oh, well. Maybe it was Josh.
So when was your time slot?
My time slot was, well, actually, the first day at the Chomel stage was called the Disco Death. I don't know what the name really meant, but each day had a different name. But basically, it was myself and Jovian. We each had our own individual sets, and Heavy Crew, three friends from Hong Kong, also performed.
Mm-hmm.
But my personal set, I believe, was 8:30 to 9:30 or 8:30 to 10. And then I played again late at night, about 2 in the morning.
How many people were there at the festival?
Hard to say. There were a lot of people there. The first day, it was completely crowded. I would say maybe 30,000 people.
30,000? Really?
I mean, I'm not sure. It's difficult to guess, but there were a lot of people. Not too dissimilar from last year. Last year, there were, it was a pretty comparable crowd, I think. If anything, though, it struck me as more people this year.
And who were the biggest acts this year? Didn't MC Hot Dog play?
Yeah, he did. He was one of the biggest acts. MC Hot Dog was one of the biggest acts.
Taiwanese
rapper, right.
In your rapper opinion, what do you think about MC Hot Dog? Is he the shit or what?
Bad name. Bad name. I mean, I know it's old school. He's been around the game for a while, so he's definitely got his stripes. And he gets mad props because he's a pioneer, you know. He's one of the first guys to rise up in the Chinese rap scene and get recognized and respected across China, get radio play, have popular songs, stuff like that. As far as his rapping ability, it's pretty good. I mean, he's not mind-blowing. My appreciation of it is somewhat dimmed because even though I do speak Chinese, I can't really understand what he's saying. I find it very difficult. We have a good friend, Coffee, who's a Chinese rapper as well, and I like to have him break down his lyrics for me in order to understand it because it's just really, really hard to pick him up.
Right, and there's so, hip-hop especially, there's so much loss if you don't understand the lyrical content.
That's right. So
well, that's another post, man. Bring Coffee here and talk about MC Hot Dog's rap.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Hot Dog can write a beat, you know? No disrespect, and he's got some good beats, but it's not the stuff I bump in my iPod.
So Hot Dog was one of the big headliners. Also, there were a couple bands from different countries. I think one of them was Does It Offend You Yeah?
Oh,
yeah. From England, I believe. It's like satire name. But they're electronic rock music.
Did you see them?
I did see them, yeah. Actually, my cell phone got stolen during their set.
How was it? How was their show?
Musically, it was pretty interesting. That was probably the set that I was most looking forward to. And I remember I went straight to the front of the stage to try and be in the center of the mosh pit and just try and maximize my enjoyment of the performance.
maximize my potential cell phone loss possibility.
That's true. Actually, that really wasn't a concern for me. It should have been more of a concern. It's actually not the first time I've had something stolen from a thief at a music festival. The first time was in Vietnam. But in any case...
Was it stolen off your person?
Yes, it was stolen right out of my pocket.
God damn.
Wow, that's pretty slick.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
that guy was moshing really heavy with me.
You guys might be surprised to hear that I talked to a handful of people who also had their cell phones stolen on the same day as me.
Yeah.
One of which was one of my guests from Hong Kong. One
really?
Member of Heavy Crew. Yeah. Pacquiao and DMC.
A lot of people got their cell phone stolen. That,
right. Tang Zhong, also one of the owners of Shengmao Club, also got his cell phone stolen.
Well, think about it. Think about what went down. Isn't that a cool idea?
Yeah.
A whole crew of pickpockets.
We're
like, yo, on the second day, we're going to spend money on this ticket. Don't sweat it, because we're all going to get 50 motherfucking phones. And
yeah.
It's like, yeah, and they run in there and just steal. Like,
can you? I mean, it must have been so easy. Must have been so easy. Because I mean,
everybody is plastered.
No, I wouldn't say that everyone's plastered.
Okay, 65% of the people are plastered.
If you had been in the crowd, I think you would have not noticed that.
Yeah, but if you're
because
like...
Because it's pretty much a crowd of 10,000 people standing there staring.
Aren't they like jumping around and like hooting and hollering and stuff?
Not really. I didn't get to,
not really.
I didn't get to finish my explanation of what the atmosphere was like.
Okay,
let's hear it.
So my idea was go to the front of the crowd because that's where most of the energy will be. I go to the front of the crowd and there's about 40 or 50 people at the very front. It's not really a mosh pit. I mean, most of the people there are just kind of standing, looking around. Some people are pushing each other. There are a couple people, you know, throwing their water around and everybody, stuff like that. But really, the atmosphere just was not there. So the band is on stage. Musically, they're really cool. It's really interesting. I enjoyed it musically. But in terms of music festival atmosphere and feeling the energy of all the people and, like, live music,
mm-hmm.
There was definitely something major missing.
Psychedelics.
For example, yeah.
Well, I compare this, I mean, anytime I go to a music festival, I compare it with what I'm used to, you know, which
mm-hmm.
is like Coachella, Lollapalooza, you know, HF Festival in Washington,
right.
D.C., stuff like that.
Right.
Stadium music festivals.
Right.
And at those, the atmosphere is really off the meter.
Right.
People really enjoy the music. A lot of people know all the songs that are being played. Some
right.
of the people sing the songs. I mean, the atmosphere is
people
driven. It's a more fun atmosphere. Zebra struck me as like a lot of people... I mean, the majority of the crowd is probably not really music lovers particularly.
Well, I mean, it's one of those situations where a lot of the people probably just came because they knew it was a festival and they just saw whoever was playing. They didn't go there to see the specific acts.
Right. It's a spectacle of sorts.
I remember last year there was, I thought was really cool, was you had a lot of straight floating population type migrant workers
really?
Walking in like 20, 30 deep crews through the festival just kind of gawking.
Really?
You know, because they... I can't remember what the tickets were like last year, but they must have been cheap enough where like they were like, hey, we ain't got nothing to do. Let's go check out what's
tickets
going on.
Tickets were quite expensive, actually. They raised the price this year. I think it was 80 kwai. No, my 80 kwai or 100 kwai per day. And then I think 200 for a three-day pass. So they raised the price. And in addition, there wasn't really a legitimate headliner, you know?
Mm-hmm.
MC Hot Dog, okay. Does It Offend You Yet? Okay. But, I mean, in other music festivals in, you know,
music
culture,
festival culture,
exactly,
yeah.
Then these guys would not even be on the radar as far as being headliners.
Right. And, I mean, that probably has something to do with the level of engagement in the crowd. Not only the fact that there weren't as many headliners, but also that there's just not as much of a music festival culture in China. So there's not a tradition of people getting really amped up for these, going long distances, and making it into a whole event.
Right. Actually, I enjoyed the Little Bar stage probably more than any other. That's where I heard most of the acts that I remember from the festival.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, let's see, probably about 25 bands at least. And out of all those, they all just kind of blend together except for about three or four of them.
Mm-hmm.
And those three or four were really enjoyable. And they kind of
Name?
I mean,
yeah, you want to give him a shout out?
Yeah, one was Xiaohe, which is apparently a Chengdu singer songwriter guitarist. There was another guy, Zhang Yunpeng. I'm not sure where he's from. I don't believe he's from Chengdu. He is also a folk singer, acoustic guitar. He utilized a lot of really interesting technology in his set, though.
Hmm.
He had a laptop, and I couldn't see what he was doing exactly, but he had a foot switch. So he was triggering loops and effects and changing the sound of his guitar, which is really cool. So he's up on stage, and it's raining, and he's inside a little tent, and there's spotlights in the tent, and everyone's just standing with umbrellas trying to stay dry. And he's playing his music and looping it, and he's changing the sound of his instrument. So the acoustic guitar for a couple bars will change into what sounds like a sitar, and it really sounded like an accurate sitar, I mean, in this one particular song. Changed to different sounds also, and a lot of delay and echo effect. He used a vocoder on his vocals. So really interesting...
Eclectic mix.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting use of technology in what is normally an acoustic format of music.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of... Was it an iPhone that was stolen?
No, it was a BlackBerry. Actually, I upgraded to a better one, though, so it's not too bad.
Oh, really?
I have a really good friend who sells BlackBerries, and this is my third one I bought off him. So fortunately, I have good connection to get you know, a good phone at a reasonable price.
You want to give him a shout out?
Shout out to my man Li Liang.
What's up, Li Liang?
Yeah, you need a BlackBerry. You
need a BlackBerry. Hit up Li Liang.
Okay, so
the next topic we're going to talk about is bike theft.
Yes.
Eli just had his bike stolen recently. Tell us what happened.
Whoa. Near stolen.
Okay, sorry.
That's the big payoff. What about, you guys want to skirt around the issue for a second? How many bikes have you got stolen in China, Charlie?
At least 3.
Yeah. How about you, Sasha?
3 that I can remember.
Yeah. I had 1, and since that day, I've been very, very cautious with my bike. I've been quite lucky. Yeah, big problem. But bike thievery in China.
So what happened?
Okay, so I was second day of work. Went to the subway at First String Road and Kohua Beilu at Bailian Tianfu.
The sandwich shop.
The subway sandwich shop. Yes, good point. And it's a really big, fancy, nice mall, and the subway is right on the outside. So yeah, so I was sitting in there, got my sandwich. Eat my sandwich, and like I keep my eye on my bike pretty much anytime I'm eating, and I'll like glance up at it every couple seconds. So I was looking at the bike, and at some point I saw somebody like move the bike, like they put their hand on the seat and they adjusted the position of the bike. They just like moved it a couple feet, but it was still there and it didn't go anywhere. And I thought, oh, like maybe that's a worker and they're trying to clear the doorway for, you know, fire hazard reasons or some crap like that, you know.
Highly unlikely. Okay.
Highly unlikely, considering it was outside.
Yeah, like this looks like a fire hazard.
Yeah,
right there.
Exactly.
I don't think that would ever cross.
So it's like this vigilante building code enforcers. and so I kept eating my sandwich, and I looked up again, and then I saw this guy, and he had his hand on the lock, and then I was like, bam! Popped up out of my seat, burst out the door, and the guy was standing there with like. Looked like a flathead screwdriver, just fiddling with the lock, and I yelled something at him, and he, you know, stood back, and he clearly knew what the deal was, and I clearly knew what the deal was, and he clearly knew that I knew what the deal was, and then he reached into his pocket and he pulled out a knife, but he didn't do it like really quick and suave. He was sort of flustered and scared, and he was like stepping back, and he like fumbled getting it out of his pocket, and then he sort of fumbled when he was trying to flip it open, and then he held the knife, and he sort of held it unsurely, and then like, then he realized that he should sort of try to look menacing, and then he gave like a frown and like, you know, gave a little
couple, sounds contrived,
a little couple air stabbing motions, and then he got, and then I just sort of stood there, whoa, okay, he's got the knife, and then I was like, man, I should have, you know. Should have taken him out like a real hero, you know, like as soon as I saw him, I should have punched him and then sprang on him and like, you know, apprehended him. And, but that's what was running through my mind as I was like, oh shit, it's a knife. And, so then he stood there for a while, and there was a couple buddies that were with him who were on a moped standing right next to him. So he squeezed onto the moped. He was a skinny guy, like 115 pounds soaking wet, you know, and, his buddies also looked like they were 16 or something. And then he got on the bike, and then I started shouting at them, and then he did a couple more like gestures with the knife, and then he and his buddies pulled off, and I sort of ran after them like shouting and waving my arms because.
Were you shouting in English or Chinese?
I was shouting in Chinese.
What were you saying?
I was like Xiao Tou, Xiao Tou, and then I probably said some like, you know,
a thief.
Yeah, probably was not my most eloquent moment. And but the thing is, it's a really open plaza in front of the mall there, and there's like bollards that surround the periphery of the plaza.
What?
Bollards, like a pylon, like a concrete pylon attached to the ground. So it's a big open space in front of the subway area, and cars can't drive through it, and there's guards that are like stationed at the edges of that sort of thing. And so I shouted at them as they were driving away, and I did not give much chase because, you know, still had 6 inches of Italian BMT that I had to get back to, and went back, finished my sandwich, you know, got up to leave, and then had a little discussion with the security guards on my way out, and they were, you know, asking me what happened. I gave a brief report of the incident, and that was that. Got my blood pumping, you know, I was happy not to lose my bike.
Is that the first time that you've had your bike threatened by a thief, or have you had a bike stolen before?
I have had a bike stolen before. I've never actually seen anyone trying to steal my bike in the past.
I have.
But I know many people who have, and it always ends up with them being like, I wish I whooped that guy's ass, you know?
Yeah. Now, I never saw anyone try and steal my bike, but I did see, I was telling Charlie about this earlier today, I was standing on the corner of down by Shaojiahe over there, Yongfeng Lu, standing on the corner there.
Yep. Neighborhood.
Yeah, in the neighborhood, back in the neighborhood. And there's, I don't know, 300, there's, it's always crowded down there. There's like 300-400 people on the street walking around. And this flatbed truck, this white, you know, like a flatbed truck rolls up, and two dudes run out. They grab a bike, pick it up, drop it in the flatbed truck, jump in the truck, and drive off. It took all of 20 seconds for that to go down.
Was that a bicycle or a motorized?
No, it was like a, I think it was an electric, a bigger like electric.
Uh-huh.
It could have been a motorbike.
Yeah, I've always wondered how does the process happen. You know,
that's what they do with the. I mean, that's what they do with the bigger ones.
It makes sense. Yeah, flatbed pickup.
At first, I was just like, I thought the same thing you did. Like, there must be a you know a reason for this happening. You know,
that guy
know
must have
long,
needed
yeah.
emergency bike fixing.
Bike.
Yeah, exactly. maybe they're bike transport experts.
Yeah,
know,
like there must be a company. I need their help. You know.
Yeah, there's an element of that too. It's like
they took it and snatched it, and nobody did shit.
Yeah.
Nobody even looked at him. Nobody said nothing.
Right.
Nobody did anything. Everyone just was all. I don't think it.
Not my bike.
It happened so quick. Whoever, like, I noticed it. I didn't do shit. I was standing right there. I didn't be like, "Oh, you steal the bike." I was just like,
"Oh,
hey, my bike." That was the same thing everybody else on that street was thinking. I'm like, "Hey, my bike."
Hey,
and
okay.
And that's the first thought that went through my head, and I'm ashamed of that. I'm sorry. But actually, the first thought was like, "What are those guys doing?" And by the time I could have done anything, they were already on their way out, man. It was that quick. All
right, I got.
The bike thieves here are cold professionals.
Yeah,
I mean, that guy doesn't sound like a cold professional, man. The dude who like messing with your lock.
Well, there's probably varying degrees of professionalism,
right,
but I've had a bike stolen from very nearby me. I mean, 10 feet, and my bike was locked, and I did not even notice it getting taken. And I came back outside, and the lock was sitting busted on the ground. So I mean,
well,
this quickly,
your bike was stolen and you were 10 feet away.
Right.
Where was it?
It was outside of a sushi stand, which was on Kohabe Lu last year.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So my bike was parked right there. I probably left here for about 10 minutes. I mean, there wasn't even a wall or a door separating me and the bike.
Uh-huh.
It was just out of my peripheral vision.
And you didn't hear, you didn't see anything?
Didn't hear anything, didn't see anything.
Right.
The people who worked there also know me, and they, you know, they saw me come in.
Right.
They didn't, you know, as soon as I realized, I mentioned it to them, they said, "What, we didn't see anything, we didn't realize anything, we didn't hear anything."
Uh-huh.
Nothing. I mean, they're really professional. And also, they're so numerous. Another time I had a bike stolen, I went to a framing shop to get some art framed. And I left my bike unlocked outside the door. But I knew that the framing job had already been completed because I talked to the guy on the telephone.
So you knew you were just going to be in there for a second.
I was literally inside for 20, 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like under a minute. I parked my bike, ran inside, gave him the cash. He gave me the frame. I come outside. Bike's gone.
God damn, you must have been mad.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Pretty mad, but that's the reason why I don't buy expensive bikes. Also, I saw it coming. I expect to have a bike stolen in China. That's why I won't spend more than 500 yuan on a bike.
Yeah, me neither. My first bike was actually, I bought it off a stolen bike vendor.
I think that's how everybody got their first bike.
Right, pretty much. I mean,
50
the bike,
walked in there,
for
like,
anyone, for anyone
got
who
a bunch of bikes,
know,
dog. Like, yeah, all right.
For anyone who doesn't know, the bike buying process is a little different in China than it is in most other places.
Yeah, you go into the hood.
You find the deepest alley and find Lao Wang chilling there with like 20 bikes.
Yeah.
Well,
the place
where most people buy bikes probably is Jiuyanqiao.
Yeah.
That's a notorious district for bike sales.
It's right behind the fish market. Yeah, there's a fish market right next to the little hutong where it is.
That's
and
right.
There'll be old ladies out there and they'll be like, bicycle, you want bicycle? And then they'll take you back to the alleyways. And then the open sewers, and then they'll take you into some, you know, little, like, concrete shanty with a rickety wooden door. And then they'll take you through, like, several corridors back there, and there'll be
10 different dusty bikes all parked next to each other.
Yeah, and just a room full of bikes, and then you'll be like, "No, I don't like any of these." And they'll be like, "Okay, we have more." And then they'll take you down another alley, and there'll be, like, you know, cats skulking around on the rafters, and you know, then they'll pull out some nice bikes. And when you go in there, every single bike says like Giant on it. It's like they've all been spray painted black and then like Giant sticker just thrown on the side.
Really? Is that so?
Well, I've seen a lot of them like that where it says like the name of a reputable bike manufacturer, but it's obviously like the rickiest piece of crap in the world. And they've just taken some sort of sticker and slapped it on the side.
That's pretty enterprising. I mean, they go that far. They're like, "Hey, we're going to try and trick somebody."
Yeah.
Well, hardcore, you know?
I mean,
like,
they'll negotiate.
We already stole it. We haven't gone far enough yet.
Yeah. We have to pretend that it that it's not stolen.
I mean, I bet they mark them up, you know? I mean, I bet they get them fixed up and then make them nicer and try to maximize their investment of time and risk.
Yeah.
I got a great, great segue, though, based on the whole not my bike attitude that you find in China. Because recently there was a news story that, like, really got my girlfriend up in arms.
Bike thrower?
No. that would be... Is that a real story?
Yeah, I'll tell you that in a second.
This was a story about someone who was assaulted in the subway, not the sandwich shop, but the mode of public transportation. And they were down in the subway station, and it was some woman, and a guy stole her purse, and then she tried to, like, steal it, grab it back from him, and then he just beat the crap out of her, and he just, like, beat her into a pulp, like, in front of, like, 50 people, and nobody did anything. And there was just, like, lots of people standing around on the subway platform. They just watched this guy, like, brutally beat this woman, and it was all caught on video camera. And so, you know, that kind of thing gets out there in the blogosphere, and then people, you know, Chinese netizens are asking themselves, like, what is it about Chinese citizens that nobody felt the need to, like, jump in there and try to be a hero? And this is something that I think sort of gets at the heart of the difference between Chinese attitudes and American attitudes, because in the States there'd definitely be people who are like, you know, vigilante justice, I'm going to be a hero. But in China,
there'd
it's
be
like,
more than one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you'd like to think that, but there was another one in Oakland where this huge dude got out of his car on the Oakland Bridge and beat the shit out of it. Actually, beat her to death. I think he beat her to death. That was the big deal too about it.
Uh-huh.
And people drove by. Nobody did anything.
Yeah,
so
that's
surprising.
Shit,
what I've observed.
That shit can happen
in
the States too.
I mean, American people often are very willing to involve themselves in other people's business if they choose to make it public.
Right.
And I've witnessed that many times on buses, on subways, all over
right.
the place, on airplanes. I remember in New York City once I saw two people fighting on the subway. And they're fighting and the girl wants to leave and the guy won't let her leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so we arrive at the stop and the door's open and they're arguing right in the doorway. And the girl's trying to leave and the guy's kind of grabbing her and the door can't close because the two are, you know, carrying out their dispute in the middle of the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on for about 20 seconds and the door keeps trying to close and
right.
it doesn't close. And there's a full car of people, you know, 200 people watching this unfold.
Right.
And it's not 20 seconds before someone speaks up for the crowd
right.
and says,
"Yo, man,
get the fuck off the train."
Yeah.
That was the line. And as soon as he says it, you can hear, you know, everyone echoes his sentiment.
Right.
So, I mean, it did not get to a physical...
Confrontation.
Yeah, confrontation.
Did they get the fuck off the
but,
train?
But before it got to that point, I mean, the crowd, you know, voiced its want.
Yeah, and I can give you another situation where this is sort of germane. Let's just say that I have a friend who's a graffiti artist, and he used to do graffiti in the States, and then he did graffiti in China for a while. And in China, it seems like it's... even though this is counterintuitive for a lot of people who live in the States, it feels a lot safer because from what he's told me, when he's out there doing graffiti in China, people will just walk right by. And,
or watch.
Yeah, or watch. And
they're
not,
straight up watch.
And not say anything. Nobody will ever dive in there and be like, "Hey, man, that's private property. You shouldn't do that."
Oh, never. If anything, they say, they comment on the artistic integrity of the piece.
Exactly.
You should use more blue.
Right.
I've seen someone do that before because I spent a lot of time with a Norwegian graffiti artist in China. And he used to, his whole thing, the reason why he came to China was to spread his artwork through a new country.
He bombed the entire nation. For real, dude. He bombed everywhere.
He didn't really do bombs, actually. He did really long, big pieces.
Well, you know, whatever. He bombed the place. You know, he just used like big, fat pieces to do it. He used nukes.
Yeah, I mean, I think bomb is like, has a kind of disrespectful connotation.
Not necessarily. It just suggests
no,
that it's like
that
illegal. It. Just illegal. Not necessarily that it's not a good quality. Although
anyway, I remember more than once he was approached by people on the street and he didn't speak any Chinese and they didn't speak any English and they couldn't really communicate.
Uh-huh.
But you can clearly see that they were dissatisfied. I'm sure that there's much less of that here than there is in the United States.
Yeah, in the States, man, graffiti artists get shot all the time by private property owners. But that's the kind of thing that in China people would never think about taking the law into their own hands in the same sort of way. You know, they think about reporting it to whoever they need to report it to.
Just to show the complexity of this, you know, the fact that it get, you know, of course there's exceptions. There was a big deal on the blogosphere about the bike throwing hero. You remember that?
I remember that. I did see that.
That was the coolest thing, man. What happened was in, I think it was in Wenzhou, it was in the East Coast city. two moped thieves roll up on this lady and grab her purse. She goes sprawling, you know, because they're riding the moped.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they just snatch the purse as they go, right?
Right.
A dude and the security camera catches the scene in the cameras only from this. It shows this dude on a bike. He gets off his bike. This is all you see so far right now. This dude gets off his bike. You see he's got a posture of, I'm about to do something. He picks up his bike, tosses it, and then into the scene goes a skidding moped. And these dudes go flying.
And so he threw his bike.
He threw his bike at the moped. The moped goes flying.
It was a perfect throw, too.
Oh, it was just, it was so cool, man. And then he grabs the purse. Lady gets the purse back. Then he rolls up on the two thieves. Like, not only am I going to send you flying, I'm going to stomp you both out. And then the thieves get up and rush him, and he turns and runs high-tailed back. He was like, oh, wait a minute, what am I doing? And took off running. But he became a superhero, man, because she got her purse back. And we're talking, he tossed the bike. I don't know if I could toss a bike like that.
It was a brilliant toss.
Oh,
it was like an Olympian would toss a bike.
Yo,
like
can we
that.
Get a can we get a link to this up on
Oh, sure, we can get a link to
you
that.
Should put like a viral video section up on there, like, you know, just something to post, like pop culture things that really get hot in the Chinese blogosphere, like you did with that clip of the girl who was scaring people in the elevators.
We can come up with our
I
own
mean,
stuff.
I want to see this video. That's what I'm saying.
It's a good video.
Oh,
I'll
man,
post a
awesome.
Link to that in this post.
Sweet. Yeah, we're good. Hey, baby.
Oh,
all right. I'm sorry. Down. Hold on one okay. second. Hold on. Yeah, don't worry. 一分钟我再给你回电话. 我们现在还在录我们的播客. 一分钟马上就完啊. 嗯，好，拜拜. That's right. See, I speak Chinese. I'm not just a blogger, bitch. Okay, I'm sorry.
How did that again? Yeah, you hear that?
Yeah,
yeah you
right.
hear that?
I'm
that's right.
Some sides.
My girlfriend, she's Chinese. Yeah. Now that we've wrapped up the bike thieves topic, I think we're all good on these three topics, pretty much. So we'll post this up on the site. Thanks for reading. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next time.
Until next time, this is Eli Sweet.
And I'm Charlie.
I'm Sasha.
All right. See you guys later.
Peace.